Welcome to Shattering Myths. This program is devoted to the most important and to the largest segment of society. To those of you who have come to realize that the world's religious, political, economic, academic, military, and media institutions are corrupt, and that all of these things are counterproductive, they cannot be fixed. In fact, I understand there's even some of you who are listening to this program who would put this program amongst those which are corrupt. Our phone number, if you would like to join in this discussion, if you would like to take on you're welcome to do so. If you have a different point of view, you are absolutely invited to share it with our listeners. Kirk is on the line. Kirk, do you have an opposition view, or are you and I, like normal, coming from the same perspective?
Well, yesterday I was kind of exposed as the crummy translator that I am, which is okay, because you can't fall off the floor, you know. So I'm more of a retranslator. So
that's, you know, what's funny is that you probably, in fact, I know you have multiple times. You've read all of the books I've written, you know, some 7,000 pages of translations and commentary, and. So you're aware of the way that I start off every book.
Yeah.
Which is to say, you know, I am absolutely irrelevant. This is not about me. I have absolutely no qualifications that would impress anyone. I'm not going to even bother to share qualifications with you because they are irrelevant to this cause. Simply doing my part to devote time to understanding what Yahweh had to say, and I'm willing to share what I have discovered with those who are interested. Flawed individual like everyone else, but someone who is passionate about learning what God had to say and who enjoys sharing those insights.
Mm-hmm. Well, based on what most of the translations are, they're not even close. So, I mean...
Yeah, you're talking about mine, or you're talking about the ones
you read in your
published English Bibles by the scholars.
The published ones by the scholars and the great priests.
Yeah, and that's why you shared Numbers, Aaronic blessing, because of the vast departure. It's probably the most cited passage in Christianity, churchianity, as people get up to leave. The priest or minister pretends like they are Aaron, although they know nothing of Aaron's position or nothing of his name, or that he is the spokesperson for Moshe, who is the spokesperson for Yahweh. And they cite it in such a way that I'm not sure they get any word. Well, they don't get any word completely right. The best that they do is a partial truth on some words.
Mm-hmm. Case in point was the Shamar, and
yeah.
You know what I found last night. I after I got home rather late, I redid everything. So
okay,
and I just wanted to ask you about Shamar because
okay.
Obviously, as observed, as carefully considered, closely examined. You know it,
right.
And so I went through where the heck do they get the fence thing? In fact, on my initial notes, if I'd read them.
That was Jeffries, the Christian who is trying to sell deeper insights into what he would call the Old Testament God to Christians.
And the way it finally dawned on me is the way I've been doing it, and I ought to just look at what I've been doing. When you break the three letters down, I had a note off to the side. I said, if this is Shamar, and I already knew it's closely examined, but if this is Shamar, and they're talking about a fence. I mean, it's such a stretch to say that, even though watch over a flock or whatever. But it's such a stretch to say that. I made a note. I said, well, where's the Chet? Now, the Chet
right.
is, of course, is a fence.
Right.
And that letter, the Chet, should be in there. If not, then the Shemek should be in there because that's a thorn. And a lot of times they would use a thorn to protect the flock. So every instance of these words, if you approach it the way I'm doing, where I'm looking for some little reinforcement of the stronger meaning, it should have been in there. And, of course, it's not. It's a Shin, Ma, and a Ra, Rosh. So,
right.
So you can't get that out of that.
No. And what do you have the both the Common English Translation and Jeffrey's translation available? Why don't you share both of those so all of our listeners that did not listen to the show yesterday or the day before, it'll give them a more full understanding of precisely why it's important to do your own study and to think about what the words mean.
Yeah.
First, read the one that is in
probably the
most English translation.
Type of version is
okay.
The Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make his face shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. Now, that's the farewell address as you walk out the door.
Right. Okay. And there's almost none of that. Almost none of that is accurate. I mean, the Lord is not accurate. Bless is only a tiny perspective on Barak. Shine is a extreme departure from the become light aspect of Ra. Certainly, Shamar does not mean to keep. That is, as a matter of fact, I would say, Kirk, that second only. I'm going to say that there's four words in Hebrew that completely transformed my understanding of who God is and how he's communicating with us and what he's offering. And Shamar is one of those four words. You're probably not surprised that one of the words is Bereth, because I recognize that Bereth is based upon Beath, and Beath is family and home. So the covenant is a family relationship. Based, it's God's home. It's God's family. So that was powerful, because that changes everything. This is not a legal contract in that sense. This is a family. So God is inviting us to participate in his family, to be his kids. The second is Kara, which means to call out, to summon, to invite, to read, to recite, to welcome, and to meet. And the reason it's so important is that God is constantly inviting us to meet with him. In fact, there are seven times each year where he is saying, I'm going to throw a party, and I want you to attend, and the purpose of this party is to provide all of the benefits of the covenant relationship, which are extraordinary. And so that would be the second. The third, of course, is Torah itself. The moment you come to realize that Torah does not mean law, that there's no legal connotation of the word at all, and then you realize that Christians and Jews alike have universally, deliberately, and knowingly misled everyone to believe that Torah was law. And it makes you really angry. But when you come to understand that Torah means teaching and guidance and direction, then all of a sudden this understanding of being invited to participate in God's family, you as he as Heavenly Father wishes to instruct and guide and teach his children. And now everything in the Torah makes sense from that perspective. The fourth is Shamar. And when Shamar is rendered as it is universally, and English translations is keep, and keep is understood as do exactly what this says, you know, keep to the straight and narrow. If I give you a commandment, you keep that commandment. That's how it is rendered. It's not what the word means.
Yes.
It's just flat out not what the word means. And when you come to that understanding, everything that God is, has to say, is offering, desires, all falls into place. Those four words transform everything when properly understood. And you're right, Shamar means to observe, to closely examine, to carefully consider, to focus on something that you value, to care about, and to be interested in, to prioritize something that you pay very special attention to. Shamar means. Go ahead.
All right. Anyone have said, you know, so much about jots and tittles if he didn't want you to look at all those little details.
Yeah, what Kirk is referring to here for again for somebody who's hasn't listened to the breadth of programs and his Sermon on the Mount, which was actually instruction on the Mount, Yosha spoke of the Torah and said, you know, do not think that I came to annul the Torah, the teaching. I came to fulfill it. And he said, not a single jot, and as he actually said, yod, he was speaking in Hebrew, or tittle, and the tittles are the strokes that comprise each of the Hebrew letters, all of which depict a picture of what they of what the letter represents. Not a single yod or tittle will cease to be valid so long as the heavens and earth exist. Which, when you take those statements in context together, you can't have a New Testament. You can't have a religion of Christianity, and the Torah still prevails. But beyond that, what you're doing, which is to closely examine each of the strokes of each of those letters that comprises the Hebrew words of the Torah, all of a sudden becomes the essence of enlightenment.
Well, you can't miss it if you go through all that many steps. I went to an additional my Hebrew Chaldees lexicon as well, just to get another shot at it from another one, and then I went back to the letters and did those last night, and it's just you know, it means what it means, and those are true, and you use those as a filter, and everything else makes sense. Now, I would throw in Yahweh's name just because. You know, I like to know who came up with all this, and that tells a story as well as you've talked often of. So, in any case, when we went back, did you want me to finish reading?
To finish reading this, and then tell us what you learned about Shamar.
Okay. Yahweh will kneel before you presenting gifts and will guard you with a hedge of protection. Keyword there. Mm-hmm. Yahweh will illuminate the wholeness of his being towards you, bringing order, and he will provide you with love, sustenance, and friendship. Yahweh will lift up his wholeness of being and look upon you, and he will set in place all that you need to be whole and complete.
Yeah, and you know, we're going to examine that after Kirk shares with us the insights that he has gleaned to further elucidate the meaning of the Hebrew word shamar, observe, when Shattering Myths continues, and dig into what God had to say. So as you read those two translations of the Numbers 6:25, and it's not really Numbers, it's in the wilderness, it is Ba, which is in, and then Midbar is wilderness. You know, it's interesting, the term wilderness, which is a place in Hebrew, if you look up Midbar, what you would see is desolate. Desolate means lifeless. And Midbar is actually a place without the words. If you take the components of Midbar, and it's Dabar is the final component of the Hebrew word. If you take it and you add it to the mid that comes before it, what you have is a negation of the word. So it's a place where Yahweh's testimony is negated, or where his testimony doesn't exist, that is called lifeless. That's the basis of the word wilderness, Bamidbar, and in the wilderness in this particular case. But what you found here is, or what we found here, and this is why it was interesting, uh-huh, is that the Christian publication, the King James, got very little right. Very little.
They got anything right there. Huh?
And they got almost everything wrong and very little right. Yeah. And I'm not think they got anything completely right. And some things completely wrong. And then Jeffries and his translation got more things right, and he made a pass at it, but his introduction to it is so erroneous, and his word is associated with this word when it's not. And he comes in with fence in as opposed to observe, for example. And he views Barak bowing down from the Christian perspective, that we should bow down to God, when in fact in this case and in every other case, when Barak is used in conjunction with Yahweh, who's doing the bowing? Who's on their knees?
Well, in all fairness, he does say that. He says, Yahweh will kneel down before you.
Yes, so, but in his, I don't know if you read his
like
preamble.
A prostrate type of kneeling.
You didn't read his preamble to this passage.
No.
Ah, yeah, I did. Because a friend who listened to us sent me the link, and so I read his preamble to the passage. And his preamble says that Barak explains how we should get on our knees and bow down before God, because he is deserving of it. Even though the passage itself has Yahweh bowing down. So it's the purpose here is not just to say the King James is wrong. And it's not to say that, and I think Jeffries, I would actually applaud Jeffries here. I think Jeffries did a good thing. He didn't get all the way to the truth, but he certainly cleared away a lot of the clutter. And I'd actually applaud him rather than, because the tone of what Jeffries came up with, the tone of it, the perspective of it, the attitude of it, is right. That's why I liked it when I heard it. The attitude of it's right, and the reason the first time you said it, you know, I think we're going to need to pay a little more attention to this, because I suspect that's not exactly what God said. And when you get it to what he actually said, it goes from just being the attitude and the tone is right to it is profound. I mean, it is wow.
Mm-hmm.
Gives you goosebumps.
Yeah. Well, getting back to Shamar real quickly, I mean, it was nothing. I'm getting a little more like my wife. I can usually I'm starting to separate the message from the messenger, or at least take the valuable part out and try to avoid the guy's, recognize the guy's personal bias.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so because there's so much literature, it's hard to do it any other way. You just have to filter through all the stuff that we absolutely know that are solid, you know.
Yeah, I do that now with the lexicons and dictionaries.
Yes.
And I don't read a lot of other people's writings, but I only went here because there was so much promise, so much hope, mm-hmm. that there was somebody out there that was publishing a more accurate rendering of Yahweh's testimony, and that they, you know, got some of these words right to the roots, like, for example, Barak get on one's knees. Mm-hmm. And that was so exciting to think that somebody else was making progress in that direction and sharing it, that I went to the specific site. But that is really the thing we have to do, Kirk, is that in every tool we have to be able to strip away the religiosity, the religious corruption. For example, every one of the lexicons is published by a company that publishes a Bible translation. And one of their definitions is there to justify their existing translation.
Yeah.
We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattery Mist. We want to listen to what Kirk has learned and wants to share regarding the meaning of Shamar. From my experience, I'll tell you, I think that Shamar is one of the four most important Hebrew words. I say second to Shamar, after you get to it, Kirk, Shama, which is written very similarly, but Shama would be the next most important, only because it's so erroneously rendered in all English Bible translations. Shama is almost always rendered obey when it means to listen.
Mm-hmm. Here, yeah.
Yeah, to hear.
The well, we already know Shamar. It carefully considered, closely examined, and mm-hmm. the point I was trying to figure out is it anything other? Is there any way to get to the fence? And you can't get to some kind of fence at the end, Chet.
No, the Chet isn't the Hebrew
there.
Letter for
not
fence,
there.
Where you have to protect by a fence, which is to, you know, protect those you love, your family and your flock, you care for, that you're responsible for. It's a Chet, and that's a protective circular fence, which is also symbolic of what Yahweh does for his family.
But that's not what's here, you know.
No, the letter's not in the word, is it?
So don't add it into the translation. And
right.
But what you do have, of course, is a shin, and of course that's a nourishing words. It can mm-hmm. be food as well, but it's basically the hardcore meaning to me in this context is nourishing words, something you're going to observe. You've got the mom.
Let me stop you on that just for a moment. Having done what you're doing to hundreds of Hebrew words with a shin, I have never seen shin used where the implication was the actual food that you're eating.
Oh, okay.
100% of the time, I have seen the shin, which shows the two teeth, representing the spoken word, which is nourishing. So the way that you said it is the only way I have ever seen it depicted in a word, is that the spoken word, and this would be Yahweh reciting his Torah, or us reciting his Torah today, that the spoken word is nourishing.
That's even a stronger point then. I mean, I don't have that many, I don't have enough sources to go to say that. But
well, for example, Shema, the Hebrew word for listen.
Yeah.
What's the first word in Shema? The first letter.
Shin.
And what are you doing in Shema?
You are listening.
To the spoken word, right?
Spoken word.
Pretty straightforward.
Yeah, then you've got the second letter, which is the ma.
Right.
And, of course, a lot of things about that, but it's basically it's water, but it's more important, it's the spirit, is
right.
Which we talked about quite a lot before. So
yeah, water is always used to depict three things in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. It's the source of life.
Right.
It is it's the means to cleansing. And number three, it is a metaphor for the set apart spirit, because she provides both of those functions on our behalf.
So now we're getting to the third one, which is the Rosh, and of course that's the head of a man. Now, if he wanted mm-hmm. to say people, he would have used the hay, because there's a whole person right there.
Right.
He uses Rosh, which would indicate
powerful observation there.
Yeah.
Because we don't observe with our feet, do we?
No.
We make a statement with our feet. We can walk with our feet in a certain direction. We're upstairs. Right. With our hands, we can engage with our hands. We can move in a particular direction with our feet. We make a statement when we stand up and our backs are straight. We're taking a stand. But that's not where we...
We're engaging basically is should be telling us that I think mm-hmm. that it should be engaging your senses. I mean, you hear, you study, you look with your eyes, you think with your brain, and you respond mm-hmm. with your mouth.
Yeah,
I can't get a fence out of that. Sorry.
Yeah, with the head, you have the most important senses: our ability to hear, our ability to see. Our ability to smell, and smell is actually important. From a metaphorical position, you know, does this stink to high heaven, or does this, you know, is this the sweet aroma of the spirit, of the reconciling spirit, ruach in Hebrew? And so, boy, it's pretty straightforward, isn't it? Use your head. Use your eyes to observe. Use your brain to process what you have seen. Use your ears to listen to the word of Yahweh, and you will be cleansed, and you will live.
Yeah,
that's what the letters say, man.
So that would be. So you have to correct that. You know, you have to correct where so you went from. Keep to hedge of protection, and why don't we just go back to Shamar?
Yeah, why don't we just go back to Shamar? That's what the word means. There is one way that you can have keep be part of the word, but it's only as part of a phrase. Keep focused upon.
Yeah, that's fine. But
keep your focus is, and it's a focus, you know, is with a lens. You focus the camera with your lens. You focus your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But to focus your eyes is to focus so you can see something that's close to you, see something that is distant. So it's to keep your focus.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. which is an observational concept.
Right.
You know, if you have the proper focus, you have the proper ability to appreciate what's being conveyed. And in this particular case, it begins with the shin. So we're dealing with the spoken word of Yahweh, which means when we recite it, as we're doing now.
So there's no way to get anything else out of that.
Yep.
I mean, you can deeper meaning, but I mean, probably.
I did. I've got a challenge right now with some two dying computers, and so until I get some time to get a new computer up and my software loaded on it, and I've shipped all of my study books to Virginia, so I'm mm-hmm. I am deprived of tools at the moment, either analog or digital. But I did bring up a Hebrew rendering of this particular passage, and it's apparent that I misrepresented a word. You know, let's begin at the beginning of this, and I'll tell you the word that I misrepresented. It begins, and this is interesting, that it begins, he shall kneel down to bless you, lifting you up. That is, the Barak is the word. Now, the subject here is Yahweh. But in Hebrew, subjects follow verbs. They don't precede the verb. So it's, he shall kneel down in love, Barak, to lift you up. It's both prefixed and suffixed. Prefixed in the third person masculine singular, addressing Yahweh. And it is suffixed as the second person plural, as in you all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would be the audience, y'all.
Now, I learned to say that. You're going to be back east, you know.
Yeah, y'all. He shall bless you. He shall get down on his knees in love to lift you up, is the most comprehensive, most complete definition of Barak. He will get down on his knees to bless you, to lift you up in love, Yahweh. And then it says, and he shall pay very close attention to you. He will carefully regard you. He'll focus on you. You will become a priority to him. He's going to notice you and diligently care about you. This is Shamar now. And what that means is so important. First, him getting down on his knees to lift us up. That is the proper perspective. God wants to get down on his knees like a loving father to lift us up. He does not want us on our knees, because that's going in the wrong direction. That upends his purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And then this idea of Yahweh is observant. It's just powerful. What it says is, for those of us who take the time to consider what he has to say, who are observant, that those of us who are observant are going to find God reciprocating. He's going to pay attention to us if we pay attention to him.
What a wonderful thing, huh?
What a wonderful thing, how that works.
Huh.
And that's the, you know, what... When the Torah is properly understood, what you find is that God values those that value what he has to offer. If you value what he has to offer, which is his teaching and his covenant, his invitations to meet with him, if you value what he values, he, in kind, will value you. If you disregard what's important to him, what he cares about, he will disregard you. And what happens if you are unknown or disregarded by God?
Well, then you're separated.
Yeah, and you cease to exist.
Right.
So the only means to eternal life with God is to become important to God. And the only way you can become important to God is for you to make God important to you,
mm-hmm.
and what he has to say, and to disregard all of the religious rhetoric. And, you know, what did Yosha say about men's testimony regarding him?
That I can't stand it.
Can't stand it. It's evil. Don't do it. Don't go there. I haven't gone there. You ought not go there.
Well, look how much time we've gone on what man translated so far. I mean,
exactly.
It could have been so simple because Yahweh speaks very simply.
Yep. And then it says again, he will make light. And this is Yahweh, but Yahweh follows the verb. But Yahweh will make light. Yahweh is light. That's if you want to have an understanding of who God is, then you need to understand that spirit is equated to light. Yahweh makes that very clear to us. If you understand light, you'll understand the nature of spirit and the difference between spirit and matter. We're matter. He's spirit. For us to be like him, we have to be transformed into light. And that is a huge upgrade from what we're like and who we are currently. So he's going to make us like his light in his presence. Powerful. It's exactly what we want. It's what the promise is, the purpose of the set-apart spirit, maternal manifestation of his light. So as we continue with this passage, and it's the name of the passage is context, is so important because it's from Aaron. And we realized yesterday, Kirk, that Aaron has a very important meaning pursuant to this statement. You still with us, Kirk?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you
hear me? And what does Aaron mean?
Enlightened free will.
You betcha.
Oh, that's good. Memory
you betcha. Yeah, you betcha. Enlightened free will. And so he is communicating this in the Jusuf, which means this is what he wants. This is his desire, and this is the response based upon exercising enlightened free will. Now, enlightened free will means you've got to be enlightened before you exercise free will, because free will without being enlightened first is just chance.
Yeah. Look, okay. Can I jump in?
Sure.
One quick sec. Mm-hmm. Look at the way he writes the word light.
Right.
Eli Feroch.
Right.
You've got the Almighty with a engaged human being with the senses, right. The head,
yeah.
Feroch.
Right.
I mean, my gosh.
Yes.
I mean, you can go through your list and all the things, and yes, it's to become light, causing you to become light, to be light or bright, giver of life, all these things. Look at the little letters in his the Almighty, the Aleph, engaged with. I mean, what a symbol to say about light. He's light. He's energy.
Right.
That's what he wants them to. He wants
with what he's offering us.
Yes.
Yeah.
No argument.
Okay.
So, can't fight
right.
Them.
Yeah. And that's what he's offering us in his through his presence upon us, and then to be merciful to us, and the merciful Chanan is he wants to bestow on us all manners of favors. You know, it's like a father with a son or a daughter. You want to spoil your child, and the most wonderful expression of that concept. To you know, they're not buying the gifts that you give them. You're just giving them to them. You know, love is not earned. You know, love is not there's not a price that your son or daughter don't do something to earn your love. Love and mercy and favor are gifts that that Yahweh is given because of who he is, not because of who we are. And then when it says and he shall lift up Yahweh, his presence. He shall really, you know, give and provide his presence on you. And then when it says and give is normally Nathan in Hebrew. And so I just assumed that give here was not having the text in front of me was Nathan. It isn't in this case. It's Shem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Shem has two meanings. One is name, the personal and proper name of Yahweh. And the other is to place.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it's written in the text, you cannot tell the difference between Yahweh's personal and proper name and place.
Mm-hmm.
So what is he giving?
Well, he's given us part of him, his
name. And we become, we inherit Yahweh's name. You know, when you're born into a family, you inherit your father's name?
Of course.
What he's saying here is, my children are going to inherit my name.
Wow.
Isn't that good? But that's what Shem, that's the meaning of Shem.
I know.
You know, about one time in ten that Shem is used, it means to give or to place. And nine times out of ten, it's a personal and proper name.
You could also throw in his place, which is all of it everywhere.
Oh, yeah. And then the last word is shalom. Shalom is one of my favorite Hebrew words because it has so much meaning. But the primary meaning of shalom is to reconcile. And when you talk about reconcile, you're talking about relationships. And so there is only one relationship in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. That's the covenant. So the covenant relationship is being reconciled. It's not because Yahweh violated, because we violated.
Sure.
And by agreeing to the terms and conditions, then Yahweh reconciles us into his family relationship.
Yep.
And shalom also means friendship. And just the enjoyment of being together. Harmony.
Yeah.
Wow.
Terrific.
Yeah, it's just really gets goosebump time as to how powerful this message is and how well it fits into the Elkanan 3 discussion, where the light came into the world and the people rejected the light. They preferred the darkness.
Okay.
And how Yahusha said, don't trust the testimony of men. I don't.